Wretched Radio begins in 3, 2, 1.
Now I can preach it like this, okay? Repent! Or I can tell you, change your mind. Preaching repentance in the area of consciousness of sins is dishonoring the work of Jesus.
Repentance means you realize you're guilty, that you deserve the wrath and punishment of God. You begin to realize that sin is in you, and you turn your back on it in every shape and form. You renounce the world, whatever the cost, and you deny yourself and take up the cross and go after Christ.
It's time for Wretched Radio with Todd Friel.
Here we go.
Survey set.
Indeed, this is Wretched Radio.
Survey set.
An awfully short stinger.
Survey set.
Real, we get the point. Tons of surveys, statistics, and polls for your consideration. Starting with Gulp. We knew it was bad. But 2% bad? Zoinks, Scoob. 2% of American millennials adhere to a biblical worldview. 2%.
Only
not 22. It's 2%. According to the Cultural Research Center at Arizona Christian University, 6% of American adults possess a biblical worldview. Okay, question.
That's terrible.
I don't want to be a nitpicker, but a Christian must possess a Christian worldview. Okay, you could be a baby Christian, not quite understand how all this stuff fits together and how it applies.
That was 6% of Christians?
No, of adults
in America. Of all adults. Okay.
Sorry, I hate to say it, but this actually falls in line with the statistic that I've held to for maybe 20 years, based on studies like this and many others. It would appear, if you had to guess, what is the percentage of Americans that are saved? It's single digits. This is another demonstration of that. Again, there can be some people. Of course, it's like, okay, I don't understand. I didn't realize that my Christian faith actually applied to all of these issues, so I don't have much of a worldview. I get that. But 6%? And have some sort of a Christian worldview? Can I really believe that 80% are just baby Christians and haven't quite grown into it yet? 6% of adults today possess a biblical worldview, down from twice that in the mid-1990s. 2% of American millennials adhere to a biblical worldview. 2%. This is why we are doing Road Trip to Truth. And by the way, I got to tell you something. We're starting to work on season 2. I know we don't have season 1 released yet, but we've been working on season 2 already, and it is so good. I was in Los Angeles all last week interviewing different experts, and we had such a gas with them. Each one of them just smashed it out of the park. We dealt with issues like philosophy. Do these philosophies, naturalism, humanism, nihilism, romanticism, topics that typically make your eyes cross and you go, I don't get anything that they're actually saying here. We talked about them in such a way that the young Christian is going to go, hey, wait a second. I am a romantic. I've actually bought into the mantra, if it feels good, do it. Congratulations. That's romanticism in response to empiricism. You are just kind of going your own way, doing your own thing. You're a romantic. So we see that these popularized sentiments that we hear in our culture, they have their roots in philosophies. They always do. These things don't come out of nowhere. They always come from philosophers, typically in academia. We studied world religions. Does Judaism and Islam have a coherent worldview? And we actually recognize there are times in some categories, they do. For instance, Judaism and Islam both adhere to the creation story. You and I would say that is both internally and externally consistent. It's internal with their holy writings, even though they're not holy. Nevertheless, they are consistent that God made everything out of nothing. Second, we would say externally they're consistent because I believe that the world, when you look at it and observe it, it actually attests to the fact there must be a creator, there must be a designer. And so we give credit where credit is due. Here's the problem. Those religious systems, they cannot answer all of the big questions harmoniously. For instance, how is a man made right with God? That's the big question of life, isn't it? Clearly there's a creator, you have a creation. We have a conscience. What does that God expect of us? And both holy systems, if you will, religious systems, better choice, They will tell you the Quran, the Hadith, the Sunnahs. Rots a rock with that. But that's the way. If you keep all of that, then maybe, by the way, maybe Allah will let you in. But he's a bit capricious and he might not. You never know for sure. Unless, of course, you commit jihad. And even that's questionable. What about Judaism? Go ahead. Keep those 613 laws. First of all, if you can memorize them, hat tip. Second of all, if you can keep them.
We do good with 10.
we can't do 10, let alone 613. And so what we see is the system that they have built is unsatisfying. It's externally inconsistent. It doesn't satisfy. We realize that that is not an attainable way for us to be made right with God. Christianity has a system, and that system is found in a person, the Lord Jesus Christ, who fulfilled all righteousness, who died for sinners, that we might be bought back so that we can be justified in the sight of God. And that makes you go, okay, all right, that just feels better. And that is a sign that a worldview is actually right on a point. If it doesn't somehow cause you to go, yes, that is good. Yes, that is right. Yes, that is satisfying. Yes, that has purpose for me. You should be really skeptical. Christianity checks all of those boxes. So that's what we were doing out in Los Angeles. And by the way, I got to tell you something. My buddy Milton Vincent.
He just killed it, didn't he?
Oh, no, he didn't just kill it. He killed it, then he stabbed it, then he slaughtered it, and he did anything else that sounds violent in the vernacular of the millennials these days. That is apparently a way of saying he done real good. So John Fabares says to Milton Vincent, who's the author of Gospel Primer, which you should get. I did not realize there's 250,000 copies of that sold. I did not know. I'm glad. I wish it were 250 million. It's a beautiful book. It'll help you to focus on what the universe was created for us to focus on, and that is God's redemptive work through Jesus Christ. So Fabares says to Milton Vincent, can you explain why the gospel is so amazing? All right, stop. You answer that question. Why is the gospel so amazing? Now, you and I would be inclined to say things like, it's amazing because God did for us what we couldn't do for ourselves. That's amazing. God didn't have to do anything kindly toward us, but he provides amazing grace. That's
amazing.
That's pretty amazing right there, yeah. God's going to take us to heaven. That's good. That's amazing right there that he's preparing a place for us. Okay, that's how you and I would answer it. Permit me to do my best Milton Vincent impersonation. All right, so Jimmy, you're John Fabares. Ask me what's so amazing about the gospel.
Why is the gospel so amazing?
Okay, he didn't say anything. He kind of made this grunting sound. Like, I am so filled with this information, and that is that question causes inside of me this undiscernible And then he began. Imagine a man 2,000 years ago offering this prayer to God. Dear Lord, I know that I and every human being have sinned against you, violated each and every one of your 613 laws. We deserve your temporal and your eternal punishment. We acknowledge that. But I'd like to ask you to send the second person of the Trinity to earth to take on human flesh and to live a perfect life of righteousness on my behalf. And then I'd like you to send your beloved son to a cross where he's brutally beaten and has nails driven through his hands and feet until he suffocates and dies, propitiating your wrath on my behalf. So I want you to give me his righteousness and grant me the forgiveness that he provided on the cross. And then, Lord, if you'd have him rise from the dead and ascend into heaven, defeating death, sealing my eternity, and until I join him, Would you have him prepare a place for me in heaven? and allow me to reign with your son. Would you please do that for me, Lord? Nobody would dare to utter such an audacious prayer.
I bet the room was silent.
But that is exactly what God has done for us. That is what God has concocted, if you will. You and I wouldn't have put that together in a million years. And if we had, we would not have the audacity to bring it to the throne room and say, do this for us. But God said, I will do this for you. I am this good. I am this kind. I am this righteous. I am this holy. I am this just. I am this benevolent. And this is what I desire to do for you, even though you don't deserve anything but my wrath. You and I wouldn't dream up that plan, but it is exactly God's prearranged plan. You and I wouldn't dare to pray it, and yet God has answered that prayer without us ever even uttering it. Why? Because the gospel is that amazing. Can't wait to share it with you on Road Trip to Truth Season 2. Of course, after we release Road Trip to Truth Season 1. This is Wretched Radio.
The main character of missions is the theologian preacher who goes out and proclaims the word of God. And I would suggest to you that the great majority of missionaries on the field do not fit this description.
The Masters Academy International, they're working tirelessly to change that. We have pastors all over the globe, but in so many countries, they have no means to get educated. The Masters Academy International trains indigenous pastors to become theologians, scholars, and right expositors of the word. Think of the impact of a pastor preaching rightly to his congregation, who then goes out and shares the good news that they've heard preached rightly. Small investment, massive impact. Could you support a pastor to be trained as a theologian? Wretched.org/pastor.
Hey, thank you for tuning in to Wretched Radio today. As always, we are appreciative of your time, and we'd also be extremely appreciative if you would consider partnering with us here at Wretched to save the lost. Wretched relies on your kindness, the kindness and generosity of God's people. We're a 501c3 nonprofit organization, so all gifts are tax deductible. And listen, the more you give, the more we're able to give away, and that's exactly what we do. 83% of every dollar you give goes directly to ministry. We're ECFA approved, the Evangelical Council for Financial Accountability. It's an accrediting agency that checks our books to make sure that we're spending God's money on wise things and not on jets. You can give either through wretched.org/donate, or you can text Wretched to 44321. Wretched.org/donate or text Wretched to 44321. Wretched. Amazing grace. Amazing gospel.
No doubt, if you've spent even a minute listening to conservative media, you have been whipped into a frenzy. The problems with our society, the collapse of a culture, the statistics, the legislation. We got to do something about this. But then we're never told what to do. I believe the greatest social ill of our time is the war against the unborn. Millions of children being killed in our country during our lifetime. And we can do something about it, and we can practically get engaged in the war for life. Preborn.org/wretched, $28 will provide an ultrasound 80% of the time. It saves the life of a child. Let's not just be righteously indignant. Let us do something to save lives. The women hear the gospel, they receive support, and they choose life. $28 for an ultrasound. Preborn.org/wretched.
Books of the Bible. Nehemiah is the continuing story of exiles returning from Babylonian captivity. In this book, the people rebuild the walls of Jerusalem and renew the covenant under the leadership of Nehemiah. Despite opposition, the wall is rebuilt in 52 days, and it's perceived as a work wrought by God.
God will bless that work which brings him honor. This is Wretched Radio with Todd Friel.
Stinger says...
Survey said...
This is Wretched Radio, the world's shortest stinger, right there on Wretched Radio. All kinds of studies. Looking for one that might be encouraging. Not finding much. 2% of millennials believe that the Bible applies to life. Hold your tears, because only 6% of Americans agree. That's everybody from birth to death. If we believe that this is a majority populated nation of Christians,
you're wrong.
The survey says otherwise. We should not be shocked that so much evil and so much bad thinking is going on in our world. It happens to be a study from the Cultural Research Center in Arizona at the Christian University, where they probably have about 2% there too. I'll tell you, it's time for Christians to take a look at what have we been doing with our youth. Why are we seeing this number decrease again and again and again? You say, well, we don't do things based on statistics. It's funny you bring that up, which you didn't. I actually did it impersonating you. Didn't Jesus say that he's going to grow his church?
He did.
He's going to build his church. In other words, it's going to triumphantly march forward, and it is going to grow. This is why Jesus said, you know, this miracle that you just saw, you're going to do bigger miracles. And I think that miracle that he was referring to is you're going to be a part of the growing of his kingdom on earth. The growing of the church, which is expressed by a local body all over the globe, it's growing. It's got to grow. Now, I grant you, there are times and places and seasons when it can diminish in an area. But is there really any reason for it to be shrinking in our time? We still have liberty, still. We still have the ability to teach our kids whatever we want to now. What's different? Why is it changing? How's about because we're using very, very little catechesis and we're serving far too many pizzas, playing far too many whipped cream and peanut butter games, and we're not spending the time forcing our kids to memorize the Bible, to understand that theology works.
So in our effort to grow the church, we've actually made it worse.
Absolutely. That's the irony of the entire seeker-sensitive movement. It was a well-intentioned movement. It was just poorly founded. It's interesting, especially these days, as you take a look at the shrinkage of the church, even in churches that claim to have a high view of God. Why is that? So some churches, they will say God is sovereign. That's cool. That's good. That's right, isn't it? He's sovereign over everything. And we hear these churches and these pastors will say things like, a particle of dust does not land where God has not ordained it. And we say, amen to that. And then you take a look at ecclesiology and you are forced to ask the question, so where is God sovereign there? In the church, in church polity, in church liturgy, in church discipline. Is God running that aspect of the world? Or do we say, no, we don't consult God. We consult the pagans, asking them what they want. And then we ask Christians who are not very grounded in a biblical worldview, what do you want in church? And we do church for them, failing to remember that God is sovereign over everything, especially his church, might I say. There's a really vast disconnect between the doctrine of sovereignty and the doctrine of ecclesiology. And that is what the seeker-sensitive movement has wrought. And I believe that's why we're losing so many of our kids. One of these days, I'll run over to my office and I'll grab the catechism, if you will, that I was taught. I'll share it with you and I'll just start reading it to you and your eyes will likely glaze over. And then if I said, that's what they used to teach in eighth grade, you'd be like, no, kids can't do that. Kids can't get that stuff. That's just really dry. Okay, maybe it is dry to an eighth grader. So what? So is geography.
But it's dry to the eighth grader because they haven't been taught how to enjoy the Word of God.
But yeah, I agree. If I brought that curriculum into the studio and read it, you'd say, you know, you could at least write it in a way that shows how this kind of works. I would grant you that. But that's not what we've done. We've said all of that is too hard. Get rid of it. And just occasionally say something with a Bible verse slapped on it. And that's good enough because that's all the kids can handle. I'm telling you, it is not. The kids are not stupid. Back to our survey. 70% of evangelical churchgoers say people are basically good. Hello. Hello. That's 70% of evangelicals say people are basically good.
This is terrible.
Apparently, they've all been locked up for COVID and they haven't been out in the public or to a Chuck E. Cheese's. Clearly, 70% of evangelicals should not be believing we're basically good. And all you need to do is either read your Bible or observe the world around you. No, observe your own children. People are basically good. 44% of American believers think Jesus sinned.
Well, it's not 50.
Ouch. 58% of Americans believe moral truth is up to each individual. There's postmodernism. The Kool-Aid has been drunk. Don't think that you are immune to it. It affects all of us. I promise you it does. There's nobody that is not affected by the world around us. And this is postmodernism being revealed in this statistic. 58% of Americans believe moral truth is up to each individual. That includes a lot of evangelicals. Record lows of people with a biblical worldview. What's changed? What are we doing differently? Can we at least now say the results are in? We evangelicals, we've adopted a lot of empirical thinking. So we've got the data now to say, how have our programs been doing? How has Groovy Church been working out for us? How has Hipsterville been growing the body? The answer is, it hasn't been. Yeah.
It's been an enemy of the church.
It's taking it backwards. We've got the data, y'all. We've got the science. We've got the statistics. Survey says we're doing something wrong. And maybe, just maybe, this is enough for us to say, we need to make some changes. Another study. This one is done by George Barna. Who else? 51% of pastors expect attendance to decline post-pandemic. It's already happening in churches that are open up now and people could come back. Now, I grant you there are some people who are still afraid. I think that's we get that. Nevertheless, it appears that a lot of churches are shrinking. We've also cited that a lot of churches they're just kind of seeing a chess game going on right now, that this has been the season that seems to be giving people permission to go check out another church, and so they are. And so people aren't coming back to their church, but they're shopping at other churches. Please be careful before you make that jump. I get it. This could be a good time to do that. There is no hard and fast rule about whether or not you should leave a church, because there's a gazillion different scenarios, including the life of your own family. Nevertheless, be careful that you don't use this as an excuse to just abandon ship and leave your church, especially without talking to them at your local church, because that's what's happening. So many people are not going to church for whatever reason. Let's just assume it's all COVID related. They're not going to church, and so it's very simple easy for the pastor to think, well, there's just people that are missing, when they've actually just gone and strayed someplace else, and he doesn't even know they're gone. Don't do that. A total of 47% of pastors say they expect attendance to grow. 51% say we think that it is going to decrease in some way, shape, or form. This would be, I think, one of the positives that is coming out of COVID. There is a good gleaning that can happen. There is a positive thing that can happen with COVID. Now, we might not see it immediately. We might. But I wonder how many people are going to happy slappy churches. You know, you can get your fortune cookie theology by ordering food from an Asian restaurant. You don't need to go to that silly center to get a pep talk. You can get it anywhere. And if it's at risk of getting COVID, that's easy for a lot of people. Furthermore, as Christianity becomes increasingly unpopular, and you can be shunned for it, or you can lose your job because of it, better be careful what you tweet if you don't think that isn't a potential reality. There are Christians who have lost their gigs because they say something biblical. Doesn't have to just be a famous person or an athlete. Just folks. Why would those people go to church for nonsense? They won't. So that can be a good gleaning. But as we see things, hopefully, returning to normal, a lot of prognosticators saying that the COVID scare might be lifted the day after the election. Please be very, very careful that if you are going to leave your church, you do it thoughtfully, prayerfully, and communicatively. That's right. I just said communicatively. Don't skedaddle without talking to your pastor. And be willing to let your pastor or elders persuade you to not go and stick around, because after all, they are still your elders. This is Wretched Radio.
This is Wretched Radio, and I am Jimmy Higgs. Well, a federal court has concluded that a New York-based Christian adoption agency cannot be forced to close down because of its policy of only placing kids in married heterosexual families. New Hope Family Services filed suit against state officials after it was told that its faith-based policy of only placing children in married heterosexual homes violated a 2013 state law. United States District Court Judge May DiAgostino granted New Hope a preliminary injunction against New York Office of Children and Family Services' interpretation of the law. In her decision on Monday, the judge concluded that the interpretation of the state adoption law against New Hope demonstrates some animosity toward particular religious beliefs. Roger Brooks, who's the senior counsel for the Alliance of Defending Freedom, helped represent New Hope and celebrated the granting of the preliminary injunction by saying today's ruling signals that the state's attempt to shutter New Hope violated core rights protected by the First Amendment, the freedom to speak what you believe, and the freedom to practice the teachings of your faith. Well, recently on the first episode of our new podcast, You and Me Both, with Hillary Clinton, the former Secretary of State, and Pastor William J. Barber II of Greenleaf Christian Church in Goldsboro, North Carolina, spoke about justice and racism. According to a news report regarding the podcast, Clinton contended that Jesus and justice are the same thing, and that Christians must understand how profoundly true that simple phrase really is. She said, quote, "You know, to say that Jesus and justice are the same thing seems to me to be so obvious. How can you be a Bible-reading person, a church-attending person, and not understand how profoundly true that simple phrase really is?" She went on to say, quote, "Black Lives Matter is a very profoundly theological statement." No, it's not. And I'd say if Hillary's deal is to talk about these type of things on this podcast, maybe that should be her first and last episode. Speaking of ridiculous comments, Joe Biden, Democratic presidential candidate, promised on Monday to pass legislation that could make the killing and murder of unborn babies up to birth the law of the land. The New York Post reports that Biden made the comment during an NBC News town hall in Miami with moderator Lester Holt. A young woman from Orlando asked Biden about U.S. Supreme Court nominee Amy Coney Barrett. Fearing the high court could reverse its abortion rulings, the student said that she knew she wanted to earn a degree and start her career before she began having children. Barrett, if confirmed, would be the sixth conservative justice on the Supreme Court, replacing the late Justice Ruth Bader Ginsburg, an idol of abortion activists. Pro-life advocates hope and abortion activists fear that Barrett could help end abortion on demand and restore protections for unborn babies in the U.S. Again, folks, I say it all the time, but elections have consequences. Please vote in November. More Wretched Radio is still to come. I'm Jimmy Hicks.
Attributes of God. Exodus chapter 20, verse 5 tells us that God is jealous. Jealousy is an intense desire to protect one's own glory, honor, and name. Since God is perfect, it is only right for him to protect his own glory. Take comfort knowing that God will receive glory, and his glory is good for you. This is Wretched Radio with Todd Friel.
And away we go. This is Wretched Radio, bringing you a conglomeration of stories that can't stand on their own, but you smash them all together. You put a music bed under them. They're all sort of out of Hollywood. Wah and la, you've got Christian entertainment news. Or something like that. Cuties, it's all the talk. You're certainly familiar with the Netflix special about cuties. You see how the world's thinking goes, don't you? They identify something that's bad, and so they glamorize that bad thing by actually doing that bad thing to show you how bad that thing is. See what they did right there?
Terrible model.
Makes sense, doesn't it? It's absolutely no sense.
Supposedly, I'll do my best to represent the folks who put this mess together. The idea is to reveal how adults use kids for bad things, like, what's a nice way of putting what they have those kids doing in this Cuties Netflix show?
Dancing?
Okay, sure. Suggestive dancing. Yeah. See how bad that is? We're going to do a movie about it and actually have 8 and 10 and 12-year-olds doing it to show you how bad it is that we make 8 and 10 and 12-year-olds do this thing. Unbelievable. This from Letter and Liturgy. Not sure how one arrives intellectually at the conclusion that Rudyard Kipling and Huck Finn are nuclear, but a movie that would land its creator in prison had it been filmed with a camcorder instead of a film crew is not. In other words, this ain't that hard to figure out. If this movie had been made with a camcorder, these people would have been arrested, I hope. Actually, the author of this article says, I take it back. I do know how one arrives at this conclusion. One decides to be for whatever the people one despises are against. This is so instructive. Why do the nations rage? Well, the psalmists tell us they hate God. Please note, while even on occasion the Psalms do talk about what the pagans do, it is almost always aimed at God. It's not, okay, well, so they did this thing over there, and it's really bad. No, it's just the thing that they did is because they hate God. They're anti-God. Why do the nations rage? You remember Psalm 2. And God sits in the heavens and he laughs because all of these efforts to be anti-proper, anti-Christian, anti-family, anti-moral, all aimed at God. And this article, I think, does a pretty decent job of explaining that is why we are seeing people do what they are doing. Everywhere I look, I see evidence of people whose deepest moral intuitions are negative. They don't know what they believe, but they definitely know and believe that the enemy is you, Christian. Why? Because you stand for something that keeps them from doing what they want to do. And I might suggest to you, right now, at least in Western civilization, and it's getting a little wobbly, the church is the only institution left that the pagans don't own. And I don't mean just your typical institutions. I'm not just talking about the political institution, the government institution, the education institution, Hollywood institution, business institution. All of these are left-leaning now and preaching morals and values that are unbiblical. The only standing institution that is resolved against those things is the church. So do we not think that the world won't come knocking on the church's door to get us to crumble too and to own us?
It's already are.
It already is. That's what we're seeing. They've got to get rid of it. If we think that people who are progressive, that people who are liberal don't desire to see the church fall, we're foolish. They have made every other institution bend the knee. And Christianity is the only thing that is left to say, nope, not good. You can't be having sex with animals. Sorry. You can't be aborting your children. You can't be defining your own gender. Of course they're going to come after us. Because we keep them from doing what they want to do without conscience pangs. They don't have a vision of human flourishing, but they can finger the people who will enslave us all. This is deeper and worse than polarization. People can be polarized because they have strongly competing worldviews. But what this author is describing doesn't require any worldview at all. It only requires that you manufacture cultural resentments as efficiently as possible. So against, until everybody has been toppled who stands against my desire to live any way that I choose. Paging Romans 1, anybody? You don't have to believe in anything in order to, quote, win. You just have to keep the only tribe away from power at all costs, the other tribe away from power at all costs. So we see that, don't we, right now? Go ahead. Tell me the socioeconomic plans of the pro-abort party. Go ahead. Let's hear it.
Got nothing.
You know, you don't know it. You don't hear it. You didn't hear it in the debate, if we can call it that. What did you hear? Bad. Terrible. Awful. Liar. Terrible. Awful. Horrible. Oppressive.
Shut up, man.
What did he call him? An idiot or something like
clown,
that?
Clown.
Yeah, that was... Like the whole thing was a debacle. It was a mess on every angle. But the point is that this particular progressive movement isn't for human flourishing with a plan. It's against anything that stands against their lack of morals. That is what is going on. Why then are some of those closest to the cause defending the film? The answer is the wrong kind of people are criticizing it. There you go. So why is it that people who are even pagans are going, we got to defend this debacle, even though we know that it's a complete mess? Why?
Because the Christians march against it.
There you have it right there. Pretty simple, isn't it? Which is also why that will also always explain to you why you see the alliances that you see. Wait a second. What? Why are the feminists marching with the Muslims who oppress them? Oh, yeah, because they're both against Christians. Yeah, I remember now. The darkness always joins together in the weirdest alliances imaginable. Why? Yep. Because the greatest ally is the light. And you and I on this earth, as the Church of Jesus Christ, not of Latter-day Saints, we're it. We're the only light that's shining. And they will seek to snuff it out. And to think otherwise, I would suggest we are being very, very foolish. Lady Gaga.
Oh,
making the news again. This is sad. This shouldn't cause us to be so misborn that way. You're pretty miserable, are you? Not at all. She admits that she had suicidal thoughts every single day after becoming successful. Isn't that interesting? The world system lies. It tells you you're going to be happy when you become famous. Lady Gaga, she believed the lie. She became famous. She has talent. The world loved her, and she wanted to commit suicide every single day. 34 years old.
You'll be fulfilled by things of the world. That's the lie.
It's tragic. When you see something like this, she's been very bad for society. She's actually, music does this. Songs are very good at propagating bad ideas. Born this way, she popularized it through music, and now it's a mantra. Don't you hear it all the time? And it's almost stated as if it's scientific when it's absolutely not. This woman has been very bad, and yet she's miserable. I totally gave up on myself. I hated being famous. I hated being a star. I felt exhausted and used up, having constant thoughts of suicide. She recalled looking at the piano that she's owned for many years and thinking, you ruined my life. You made me Lady Gaga. My biggest enemy is Lady Gaga. How instructive is that? And by the way, Lady Gaga ain't the only one. Would encourage you if you... Oh, wait. Hold on.
Sorry, I took it home.
Well, you're just going to have to... use your imagination as I make this up, but it's pretty accurate. Oh, I wanted to give these folks credit for that. Pastor Jeff, there you go, Pastor Jeff, went out to a junior high or an elementary school, received permission from the principal, gave the principal a copy of 13 Reasons Why You Should Not Commit Suicide, available at wretched.org/13, and the principal of the secular school said, yes, you can pass them out.
That's
so
awesome.
They actually got 1,000 copies and they passed out 800 of them in 2 hours. Hey, you can still do it. You can still reach kids on the campus. And I'm telling you, you will get into more. Go to a university. I know they're a little bit sparser than they used to be. Get copies of 13 Reasons Why You Should Not Commit Suicide. Get 10. Give them to 10 kids. And guess what? You're going to have 10 witness encounters. I guarantee it. I've got a better guarantee than my pillow. Not as many products as my pillow, but as good of a guarantee. Try to get to a campus and give away hope. This is Wretched Radio.
Well, it's that time of year again, Halloween, just around the corner, and Wretched has you covered this year with Don't Stub Your Toe, the perfect booklet to give away to trick-or-treaters who are coming to your door. Evangelism can typically be scary. Even Paul came to the Corinthians with fear and trembling. Yeah, Paul should have probably ordered Don't Stub Your Toe. Give away candy and the gospel this year with this 48-page booklet, perfect for all ages. During Halloween, the lost is going to be coming right to your door, so don't pass up on this amazing opportunity to give away the gospel. With Don't Stub Your Toe, it's a thorough gospel presentation written in a very accessible and friendly manner, perfect to give away with a Snickers or Butterfinger or Milky Way. Whatever you decide to give it away with, just give away Don't Stub Your Toe. Visit wretched.org/toe and order your copies just in time for Halloween. That's wretched.org/toe.
Let me take you to Eastern Europe, where the stories coming out of the Tomorrow Clubs are much better than my accent.
Katya came to the club when she was 14. Her father at the time left their family, and her mother was struggling to raise 5 kids by herself. Katya loved her experience in the Tomorrow Club right away and was overwhelmed by the amount of God's love shown through the leaders. Very soon, she brought 3 of her siblings that later became her helpers. Last year, Katya repented at the local church and was baptized. Now she's a leader in this Tomorrow Club, serving God. And I want to thank the Wretched Radio for your support that made Katya's story possible. May God bless you.
That's our dear brother, Max, leading the Tomorrow Clubs in Eastern Europe. $30 a month, 30 disciples, your own Tomorrow Club in a small, poor Eastern European village. You can become a Tomorrow Club sponsor. TomorrowClubs.org/wretched. TomorrowClubs.org/wretched.
Well, fall time is here, and you know what that means. It's pumpkin spice season. That's right. Coffee, scented candles, chapstick, Oreos, you name it, you can probably find it in pumpkin spice. And we didn't want to be left out, so for a limited time only, you can become a pumpkin spice gospel partner. What does that mean? Well, it's like a normal gospel partner, but spicy? And pumpkin-y? What's with the 20 questions? The point is, we want you to become a gospel partner. And when you become a gospel partner, you're going to be helping Wretched spread the good news of the gospel to people all over the world. As a matter of fact, every dollar you give is carefully stewarded away. If you're already a gospel partner, we are extremely grateful to you and for you. We can't do what we do without you. And if you're not, would you prayerfully consider becoming one? To become a gospel partner, it's simple. It's easy. All you have to do is visit wretched.org/donate, or to make it even easier, you can text WRETCHED to the number 44321. That's wretched.org/donate, or text the word WRETCHED to the number 44321.
Know your church fathers. Clement of Alexandria was an apologist in the late 2nd century. He ran a school in Alexandria, Egypt, where he instructed new converts and trained Christian apologists. He taught that only Christianity, with its revelation from God in the Bible, has the answers regarding creation, good and evil, and salvation. This is Wretched Radio with Todd Friel.
2 words for your consideration. This is Wretched Radio. Okay, I couldn't find the email that I was looking for, but I did find this email, and this one is just as good and perhaps is just as encouraging to you. This was David Grantham, my buddy who goes out to university campuses to do open air. Quote, our crew gave away 200 copies of 13 Reasons Why You Should Not Commit Suicide yesterday at BLU. He's in Louisiana, so BLU would be Bible League University. No, that's not right. It would be Brotherly Love University. Somebody help me!
Something Louisville.
Don't we have a Google machine around here?
Yeah, oh, that's me.
Wow. Said we handed out 200 copies of 13 Reasons Why You Should Not Commit Suicide at Blue. Even the BLM hecklers took them after we explained what it is about. I kid you not, if you get copies of 13 Reasons Why You Should Not Commit Suicide and you give them to almost anybody, they will not be offended. This issue, it's not just simmering under the surface of our society, it is boiling. And even people who are not expressing it, they are dealing with it and they are struggling with it. And they are trying to figure out a way to get through it. And the Bible offers a good way forward. And if you get copies of this booklet, 13 Reasons Why You Should Not Commit Suicide at wretched.org/13, you can give these away even to BLM hecklers. They will take them because, oh, you actually care about me? You care about my life? You think that maybe you've got some information that might be of benefit to me? I'll take that thing. And you can just hand it to somebody and say, hey, I don't know if you struggle with this or not, but maybe you know somebody who does. Wanted to give you this booklet. Do you know anybody who struggles with it? Do you struggle with it? How do you deal with these issues? And I'm telling you, you will be off to the evangelism races. It is not, I don't think that it's ever been easier, quite honestly, because this subject, even a school, a public school, allowed this onto the campus because it is something that can help their students. Because you know what they've got? Nothing. They've got journals. Was at Kennesaw State University. This was last year. And they had some tents set up because the student or the school health officials were there to help kids deal with suicide because it's rampant everywhere, even in the Bible Belt. And I asked the doctor, she was the psychologist, so what have you got for the kids? What do you do to help them? Journals. Mm-hmm. And so how do these journals work? Well, we feel that it's very helpful to write down your thoughts when you're struggling with them. And then what do these kids do with these thoughts? Do you try to somehow teach them better thoughts? Well, we just think it's very helpful for them to write down their thoughts. That's it. That's what you got. So I'm just going to take the pain that's inside of my brain and I'm going to just put it down in print. And that's somehow going to make the pain go away. That's somehow going to correct my thinking. It doesn't. They've got nothing for them. They can't offer hope. They can't offer any sort of purpose. You are flotsam floating on the surface of great big cosmic pond scum, and you just happen to make it. Congratulations. Your life means nothing. They got nothing. They teach them the very things that bring people down. They cause these kids to have their feet firmly planted in midair, just twirling and spinning and perplexed. Every single time I watch a segment of Road Trip, I get that distinct impression, which is more than a feeling. Even if you don't live in Boston, you see these kids just completely, I should be able to say that the Holocaust is bad, but something tells me I'm not supposed to, but I know that it isn't. Help me. And they are confused, and their worldview is a colossal mess of competing thoughts and contradictory ideas that are bleak and driven by death and a low value of human life. Is it any wonder so many kids are committing suicide? I'm telling you, just give them this book. It helps. What's Blue, Mike?
The Google machine's broke right now. There's something in Pensacola, Florida. You know, I'm not sure.
You're kidding me.
I can't find Blue University.
It's not Blue Uni. It's BLU.
I understand. That's what I typed in.
BLU.
BLU.
The Google machine is never busted.
Well, there's only one BLU University in Pensacola, Florida.
Huh. I'll be. So we don't really know where this was, but the reality is the kids seem to take them. All right. Business Law University of North Alabama. That's an option.
We can go with all the BLUs around the country.
You've got Brajalalal University in India. Maybe. David's a pilot. They could have flown there.
I tell you what, no matter what university it was at, it's needed.
The point is the kids will take them. That's the point. Lady Gaga, she's proven she's been an individual. She needs a copy of 13 Reasons Why You Should Not Commit Suicide. I used to self-harm, she said. I used to say, look, I cut myself. See, I'm hurt. because I didn't think anyone could see because mental health, it's invisible. Okay, she did nothing to explain why she cut herself. And you might struggle with this, but this is a reality for many, many people. Their emotions have perhaps flatlined. They are so blue that they want to feel anything. And if that means cutting, that feels good because it feels. Now, you can't get that, likely. But this is a reality for many people. Or it is a way to self-punish. Isn't that interesting? I'm going to shed some blood for the bad things that I've done. Don't you just want to scream, that's already been done, already taken care of for you. You just need to rest in that. You don't need to feel shame anymore, which, by the way, is one of the 13 reasons why people commit suicide. They feel such shame and they don't know what to do with it. So they cut themselves thinking maybe this will pay for my crimes. Maybe this will wash away my dirty deeds. Maybe this is the thing that will somehow make me pure again. And that's been done by Jesus Christ. And we have an unprecedented opportunity to share that with people. Okay, you don't want to get 13 reasons why you shouldn't commit suicide? Okay. How's about this? Ask somebody, hey, do you ever struggle with like really dark thoughts? Maybe even like ending your life? Do you ever think about that stuff? You're going to be shocked. Ask people. Ask a young person. Have you ever thought about cutting yourself? You will be staggered. And here's the other thing that's going to shock you. This is something that I've observed. So this is formal and this is official because I've observed it. Young people today, they are more than happy to share their secrets. What's going on inside of them? Go ahead and ask one. And you will hear a lot come bilging out of them. Go ahead, ask a young person if they ever watch pornography. They'll tell you. An older generation would go, whoa, whoa, whoa.
Getting too personal.
Hey, pal. What do you... I
watch pornography. Yeah, I've looked at it. Yeah, I watch it all the time.
They just open up like nobody's business. Lady Gaga opening up about her cutting, stating, I didn't really understand why I should live other than to be there for my family. That was an actual real thought and feeling. Why should I stick around? Ouch. That hurts. She has no purpose. She's one of the most famous people on the planet, and she doesn't have actual purpose. I'd had no other reason to stick around. You know why? Because singing without understanding Ecclesiastes 12, it ain't nothing. Being the president is nothing without understanding Ecclesiastes 12, 13 and 14 particularly. That unless you are doing things for God, nothing has purpose. Lady Gaga proves this. Whatever it is that you do for a living, it is vanity, vanity, unless you are doing it for the Lord. When asked if she ever thought about suicide, she said, oh yeah, every day. And this is why, to me, it drives me bonkers when I go to these dopey youth group websites and I see these videos where pastors are whoop-de-dooing with the kids. Hey, 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 who's feeling good? Did everybody have enough Cheetos? Everybody filled up on that pizza. That pepperoni was really good, wasn't it? Yeah, I love it. Oh, you probably like pineapple on your pizza. Boo! And there sits another Lady Gaga thinking about killing herself. And you've got Pastor Silly Pants. That's right, Pastor Silly Pants, because skinny jeans are silly pants. Amusing them, entertaining them, and not touching on these subjects. Youth pastor, get serious with your kids. Mom and dad, get serious with your kids. And if you can't because they won't with you because it's you, find somebody who will. I'll tell you what, you talk to my kids, I'll talk to your kids. How's about that for a deal? That way, maybe they'll open up a little bit because they do tend to open up with others, except parents. It can be a little bit tricky, but dig and dig you must because Lady Gaga is not alone. There are so many kids that are struggling with this issue, and they are looking desperately for help and for hope. And if they can't find it in youth group, how you want to see a youth group grow? How's about if you actually had conversations, biblical conversations about these issues that are causing depression and suicide? Do you think any of those kids might tell their friends?
Yeah.
Do you think that, hey, man, we have more fun than anything you can do at a frat party? That doesn't happen. But how's about we talk about things. It could be so helpful. It's so profound. It's so amazing. It's going to be so helpful for you. I'm finding myself having so much peace. You've got to come to this thing. Why don't you try that? You bastard. And until tomorrow, go serve your king.